Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay and had a good bank holiday weekend. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast on Tuesday, May the 27th. First up today, firefighters are expected to stay at the scene of a huge fire in Gravesend for the next couple of days. Crews were called to the London scrap terminal on Creakhall Road in the early hours of Monday. Around 5,000 tonnes of scrap metal is thought to have caught alight, causing a huge amount of smoke in the area. Well, if you're in Gravesend town centre, or in fact travelling through the area, the advice is to keep windows and doors closed. Sue Sharp contacted us yesterday. She saw the fire from a boat on the River Thames.
We were cruising from Queenborough this morning, heading towards London, St Catherine's Dock, and we noticed from about 10 miles away there was a big plume of smoke. As we got nearer and listening to the radio, we could hear that there was a fire at North Fleet. And as we got nearer, there was certainly a distinct chemical smell in the air. As we cruised near, the smoke thickened across the river, reducing visibility. And London BTS advised shipping to keep to the north side of the channel. I took photos as we passed by at 9:30 and saw two water tugboats were spraying the fire to douse it. And by this time, the smoke was quite dense.
And Christine Hawthorne from our colleagues at KMTV went along to the scene yesterday afternoon. She spoke to Kent Fire and Rescue Station Manager Scott Jones.
Crews have been here on site since 2 o'clock this morning. We've been working hard throughout the day to get the incident resolved. But I imagine that we're still going to be here for probably another 48 hours minimum.
And so with that length of time, do you think that the fumes are a safety risk to anyone living nearby?
If you say, we've sent out warn and inform messages via our social media methods and channels. They are a risk, but we're advising everybody in the local area to close all their windows and doors and stay safe.
Okay. Is anyone injured at all, or is everything okay?
No, there's no reported injuries at present, which is great.
And how are you putting the fire out? I've seen a couple of drones flying around. Are they helping with the situation?
So we've got 6 fire engines, a high volume pump and a turntable ladder on site to help extinguish it. And we are utilising our drone capabilities as well, which gives us an eye in the sky that allows us to see the fire obviously from above, which really does help us to resolve the incident.
Yeah, so then you wouldn't have to go in and look at it yourselves, you can sort of look at it.
Yeah, we can try to put it out using other methods as opposed to putting firefighters in the risk areas.
Okay. Are you using any other methods? I know that you have like robots and things, like little fire robots.
The fire robot is not here, but we are using the on-site machinery, the grab cranes, etc. They're helping us with our firefighting as well.
Okay, fabulous. Have you got anything else to add that I've missed? How big is the fire?
The fire is in a recycling depot, which has got scrap metal in there. It's unknown at this time that the amount of metal that's involved is estimated to be around 5,000 tonnes.
You can also see pictures and video by heading to the website. Meantime, 2 fire engines have been sent to deal with a fuse board that caught alight at a property in Northfleet. The blaze on Dashwood Road is thought to have been caused by an electrical fault. We're told no one was injured.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today, and the sister of a Margate woman who was murdered by her abusive partner has said he should never be released from prison. Mary Malkin was found dead at her flat in January 2005, and Dean Williams, who was 42 at the time, was later sentenced to life in prison with a minimum term of 18 years. He's been eligible for parole since 2023, and 2 previous attempts have been rejected. A third review is due to take place on July the 10th. A court has heard a Folkestone man was 7 times the drug drive limit when he crashed his van to avoid hitting a school bus. Harry Collinson swerved to avoid the double-decker on the A260 at Denton last October and hit a bollard instead. The 33-year-old from Woodfield Close tested positive for cocaine. He's been given a 20-month driving ban and ordered to do unpaid work. Meantime, a court's been told how a driver reached speeds of 120 miles per hour on a Kent motorway while trying to get away from police. The 25-year-old cut across lanes on the M20 before heading onto the A229 in Aylesford and eventually coming to a stop and running off. He's admitted dangerous and drug driving and is due to be sentenced in July. Now, this is our most read story on the website today. A Women's Cup final game in Maidstone has been abandoned after Palestine flags were reportedly waved in the crowd. Well, Lucy joins me now with more on this story. Lucy, thanks for being on the podcast. Firstly, who was playing?
Well, Clapton CFC were taking on Dulwich Hamlet Reserves in the London and South East Regional Women's Football League Trophy final at the Gallagher Stadium. They were only about 20 minutes into the match when the game was brought to a halt. Clapton say a Maidstone United rep demanded supporters stop displaying a Palestinian flag and an anti-genocide banner among the Dulwich Hamlet fans. The two teams were then given the chance to play the game behind closed doors, but Clapton declined.
And what have the club said?
Well, they've said 32 women were denied the opportunity to play the game. They've also confirmed both sets of supporters refused to take down their flag and banner, and that's when an official took to the pitch and stopped play. Clapton were leading 2-0 at the time, and after the game was called off, both sets of fans came together. The statement adds they joined in solidarity with the Palestinian people, singing more songs and holding up our banners in support of trans women and the Palestine people respectively.
So what happens now, Lucy?
Well, it's understood the game has been declared void and both clubs will now face a disciplinary process. That will be led by the Football Association. We've approached both Maidstone United and the FA for a comment.
Lucy, thank you ever so much.
Kent Online reports.
A driver's been cut free from a car following a head-on crash on Romney Marsh. Police closed the A259 Dymchurch Road following the collision near the entrance to Marley Holiday Park yesterday evening. We're told the person was looked after by paramedics. An outdoor sports court in Walmer has been permanently closed following complaints about noise. Bosses at the town council say it was also costing £1,200 a year to keep locking and unlocking the facility in Drill Field. A consultation on the future of it was carried out last summer and found only a small number of people were using it. The family of a little girl from Sheppey who died from cancer have set up an organisation to help other children with life-limiting illnesses. Jewel Smith was diagnosed with an aggressive brain tumour in May last year and passed away in December. More than £8,000 has been raised at the launch of A Touch of Jewels. Her parents are also raising awareness of childhood cancers. Plans to open a new Greggs store on Deal High Street have been rejected. The bakery chain wants to take over the former NatWest building, which has been empty since 2023. Council buses weren't happy about plans to replace the door and install air conditioning units. Now, next today on the podcast, and as events to mark the 85th anniversary of Operation Dynamo continue, it's been revealed how Sheppey played a vital role. Thousands of Allied troops were rescued by little ships from French beaches during the Second World War. Many of the boats gathered in Sheerness before going on to Ramsgate and then Dunkirk. Well, Jenny Herkett is founder of the Bluetown Heritage Museum, and she's been chatting to our reporter, Jo Crosley.
A lot of work had to be done in a short space of time, so the logistics of it were amazing. How they assembled crews to go with ships and made sure that they were ready, that they were had enough fuel, had provisions, and actually knew where they were going. All of those things had to be organised. Also, they commissioned some older ships that used coal, and Sheerness was ideal because we had the coal ending wharf, and so they could fill ships up. These old ships are called Smoky Joes, but again, they did their job.
So we have all these troops coming back. Yeah. They also came back to Sheerness and Queenborough, you were telling me.
Yeah, so nearly 22,000 troops came through Sheerness and Queenborough, a huge amount. When they came in, they were given sustenance, and then they would have had to walk. Most of them had to walk from the docks to the station and the bus station. And as they were walking through, people of Sheerness came out and offered them, you know, cigarettes, drinks, and to take notes on their behalf to their families. So again, the whole community really came together. So it brought service people and civilians together as one.
Sure. And maybe again, could you kind of describe the scenes of these troops coming back? I know you weren't there.
But... I mean, from the research that I've done, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of them coming in waves constantly, bedraggled. They'd been, you know, waiting in water for ages just to get on a ship. They could see ships that they'd just missed just suddenly being blown up. It's all very graphically told in the 1950s film Dunkirk, which was actually filmed in Sheerness Dockyard. And one of the figureheads that we had was actually in the film. So, again, lots of links. So the filmmakers recognised the role that that Sheerness played.
So let's talk about, you know, the recognition that the place, yeah, that Sheerness gets for, yeah, its role. You know, we saw earlier this week, Ramsgate had all the little boats go out.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel like Sheerness gets the same. It's almost forgotten, maybe. Do you think we
feel that about our heritage here. We do have a plaque that says we're part of Operation Dynamo. It's now by the memorial. We'd love to see it recognised in the schools that our history is really forefront of the role that we played. We're a tiny little island, but we've punched well above our weight, you know, in World War One and World War Two. In fact, anyone who's invaded along the East Coast has, you know, tried to chippy. So, yeah, so we've got a huge amount, lots and lots of stories to tell, and we'd love the opportunity to tell people. So if they do want to know, they've, you know, got 5 museums on the island. We can tell a good story.
Now, little ships that have spent the past couple of days in Dunkirk were due to arrive back in Ramsgate over the weekend, but bad weather means that they are currently still stuck in France. It's hoped they will get back next weekend. However, we've also been hearing about the RNLI's role in the operation back in 1940. They sent crews to also help with the rescue. We've been speaking to Peter Barker, who's from the charity.
Our history and heritage is important, and of course it was totally different times. The boats they had then were nothing like what they have now. I mean, the Ramsgate lifeboat is one of the latest craft the RNLI have. There'd be relative comfort, so it's important for crews to remember what the crews of the past went through, and the fact that the two lifeboats rescued a staggering 3,400 people. These are small, basically small single-engined open lifeboats, you know, which is a lot different to what we have now. But every lifeboat station is proud of its history and its heritage, and we don't forget that.
And tell us a bit about that rescue. Were they able to get right up to the beaches, and they were ferrying people back to the bigger ships that were waiting to save them? Is that how it worked?
Yes, because obviously the lifeboats themselves, they can't get too close to the beaches, because it's gently shelving beaches over there. And so the Ramsgate lifeboat, they towed about 10 what they call wherries from the Thames, which were small dinghies, basically, which had come down from the Thames. They towed these wherries across, and they were used to ferry the troops from the beaches out to the lifeboats themselves.
It's incredible to think how much of a success that mission was, really, with the, as you mentioned, the technology that they had at the time compared to what we have now. I mean, it really was a miracle. I mean, they do call it the miracle of Dunkirk, don't they? That seems exactly what it was.
Yes, absolutely. I think at the time it was, because Winston Churchill came up with the idea of it, and he called it a miracle of deliverance. And at the time, I think a lot of the military people thought it was impossible, so the fact that it was able to take place, and the 340,000 British, French and Belgian troops were stuck on the beaches, so it's absolutely amazing achievement.
I know there aren't many pictures from the time. I mean, we were very lucky. We've been sent some images from one of the small ships. He's lucky that he's actually got some pictures of the rescue that it was involved in. Do you in your archives have anything from the time?
Unfortunately, no, because obviously at the time there was no such thing as digital cameras that we have now. There was no connectivity that we take for granted now. And as Ted Parker, the coxswain and Margate lifeboat, he was asked the same question at the time, or similar question, how many did you rescue? And he said, I don't know, we didn't count because they were firing at us. So, no, unfortunately, we've got pictures of the lifeboats themselves and a picture of the Margate crew standing in the boathouse who were on duty during the war period. But no, unfortunately, no,
Kent Online reports.
A group in Folkestone which connects the profoundly disabled with the gifted and talented is being recognised with a King's Award for voluntary service. Shepway Spectrum Arts runs inclusive music and art sessions for people of all abilities. The award is the equivalent of an MBE and is the highest honour a voluntary group can receive. Well, Kate has been chatting to Georgina Cartledge, who's the founder of Shepway Spectrum Arts.
I desperately wanted to have an all-inclusive centre so that able and disabled were together and we could all just, you know, get along and do our creative things alongside together. And also all age. So I think this is where we get the kind of family feel, because we could have a session that had somebody with dementia in their 80s or 90s. I've got a great grandchild who sometimes comes, you know, who might join in on a little baby seat somewhere, and you might have different people with disabilities or someone with mental health issues. And we just all come together with music and arts.
After you finished a session, what do people tell you that they liked about it and how they felt after the session?
It's a very active and musical or creative session. There isn't a lot of talking or in that part of it. It is afterwards, but you do see the joy on the faces. You do see joy and laughter, which is absolutely wonderful, you know, when you see people just break out naturally, or even just break out with musical sounds, what I call singing sounds, that are just spot on, you know, and it's just lovely.
And what can you tell me about the award that you're going to be receiving?
I was nominated by the mayor of Folkestone at the time and one of the councillors. They sort of explained a little bit about how they would I be all right about them saying what I did, and I said, well, I suppose so, that's okay. It is a very prestigious award, and it's for voluntary service, what we're getting it for. And the criteria was that you had to be about 98% volunteers. So, I mean, everybody's a volunteer apart from our domestic help and one care manager. But otherwise, all the directors are volunteers, the accountant, everybody.
And representatives have been invited to a garden party at Buckingham Palace as part of their celebrations. Plans to build new houses next to a vineyard near Canterbury have been given the go-ahead. Developers want to knock down six buildings at the former Barham Court Farm and replace them with 22 homes. It's right next door to the Simpsons Wine Estate. And if you follow Kent Online on socials today, you can see pictures of hundreds of motorcycles parked up in Margate. Bikers gathered in the town for the bank holiday meltdown event yesterday. There was live music as well as around 2,000 riders.
Kent Online Sports.
Tennis first up, and Kent's Emma Raducanu says she's proud of overcoming illness to reach the second round of the French Open. She needed to see a doctor during her three-set win against China's Xinyu Wang yesterday. The 22-year-old from Orpington will play four-time champion Iga Swiatek in the second round tomorrow.
I'm actually really proud of today's match, more so than I think a lot of the matches that I've played recently or in general, because I woke up and I felt really sick, to be honest. I felt bad from the morning and I was just trying and fighting through that, and it was really difficult. I didn't, you know, in the first set, like, I just felt it straight away and it didn't really go away throughout the whole match. So to kind of come through that and overcome, I guess, how I was feeling, like, I am really happy with, and I didn't let it kind of, you know, it would have been easy to kind of let it drag me down.
Cricket and Kent have suffered their fourth defeat in a row in the county championship. They were beaten by Derbyshire by an innings and 14 runs on the final day. Kent are now bottom of the Division 2 table. Kent boxer Moses Itauma has delivered another top performance to see off American Mike Balogun. The 20-year-old heavyweight from Chatham claimed a technical knockout during the second round of the match in Glasgow. It takes his record to 12-0 in the pro ranks, while also topping topping the WBO rankings. On to football, and Kent's Alessia Russo has joined the rest of the Arsenal team to celebrate their historic Women's Champions League win. They lifted the trophy outside the club's Emirates Stadium yesterday. It's after they beat favourites Barcelona 1-0 in Lisbon at the weekend. In ice hockey, Invicta Dynamo's legend Andy Smith has come out of retirement to play another season. He stepped down from the Kent club in 2015 and is still their all-time leading point scorer. The 40-year-old says he can't wait for the first games in September. And a Kent charity that supports parents who've experienced the loss of a baby are planning a celebrity football match to raise funds. Making Miracles offers free counselling, sibling events, memory gardens and practical advice to mums and dads. The match is going to be at Chatham Towns Ground next month. It includes a celeb team featuring EastEnders and TOWIE stars. You can get all of the details by heading to the website. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget you can follow us on socials. Plus, you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And whilst you're on the website, you can also sign up to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. And if you use the promo code Nicola Everett, all one word at the checkout, you'll get £30 off the price of an annual subscription.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.